B-Pod Studios.
Ready, set, go!
This is Checkpoint XP Daily, your daily dose of esports and video game discussion. A complete look at all things esports and gaming. A production of Beasley Esports XP. Here are your hosts, Nate Bender, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan.
Checkpoint reached.
And welcome to Checkpoint XP Daily for Wednesday, January 23rd, 2019, your home for esports and gaming. I want to thank everyone listening on the Talk of Las Vegas, 101.5 FM and 720 AM, as well as KJR 950 in Seattle, Washington. Coming up today on Checkpoint XP Daily, we'll discuss whether the government shutdown could be a problem when it comes to Overwatch League. Plus, with Kingdom Hearts 3 and Resident Evil 2 remakes upon us, we reached out to our social media followers and asked them what titles they've bought multiple times. Those conversations are ahead today on Checkpoint XP Daily. But we start today playing a game. Every so often we get an important topic or discussion that doesn't quite carry an entire segment on the show. When we get a bunch of them, we like to play a game called The Last Word to put those topics to bed. So today we're going to take a look at some of the most important topics in gaming and esports. Joe, take it away.
Yep, this game is very easy. I'm going to give you a series of statements about the future of esports and gaming, and you guys are each going to get 45 seconds to respond to those statements and give your thoughts on the matter.
45 seconds each. Mm-hmm. So are you being the judge of each one of these arguments?
Yeah. I'll give you my thoughts on the end on who maybe argued the point best.
Or maybe, because we have Sarah with us in the studio, maybe we should have Sarah be our impartial judge, and then that way you can get in on the arguments, Joe.
I mean, I've had more time to think about them, but okay.
Well, yeah.
I made them all.
No excuses when your reasons are dumb.
Right?
You did, but you weren't expecting to be put on the spot.
That's true. I was not expecting to play. Okay,
all
that's
right.
Fair.
All right,
I've
cool.
got the timer up. Everybody's going to get 45 seconds.
Okay. All right. So who wants to go first on this one? Who wants the first say on the first topic?
Well, make Robbie go first.
All right, Robbie's going to go first.
All right.
Number one. Here we go. EA has always been a financial powerhouse despite the gaming community's hatred of it. The next couple of years will be where the wheels finally come off and EA falls. Robbie.
Well, I think that we can actually only hope for this scenario. I think it's more than likely, and I think if you ask a lot of people, it's actually surprising, given their history, that they haven't already taken the tumble down. So really, they're kind of on borrowed time. There's just this timer ticking away. Wondering when that money's going to run out. You know, how many times are they going to mess up a Star Wars game before LucasArts or Disney finally pulls that out from under them? How long, you know, after they've run games like or companies like BioWare into the ground, are people finally going to stop caring and finally giving them what they need? The only chance they have is if their sports games stay financially viable for them.
You still have time. You still have the time. Wow, how are you so monumentally bad at filling? You got to wait till the actual Sonic.
I know.
You got to wait till the hedgehog finishes drowning.
I misjudged it.
He didn't have a Sega Genesis as a kid. He doesn't know how long it takes for the hedgehog to drown.
I did. I just terribly misjudged it.
Wow.
All right.
You're really bad at this. I think the way, Joe, that we should challenge you is that you should be the last to go. Always.
Always last.
That's rough. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. That way you've got bare bones to work with. Yeah, there you go.
All right, Norris, over to you. You got 45 seconds.
What was the question again?
All right. EA has always been a financial powerhouse despite the gaming community's hatred of it. The next couple of years will be where the wheels finally come off and EA falls.
I'm actually going to disagree with Robbie because I simply believe that EA has put themselves in a position to where people are always going to be, you know, consumers of their games. And while unless the FTC comes in with their pending investigation on loot boxes, that does dismantle that sort of paradigm that they have with like FIFA cards and all their other microtransactions. I really don't see anything moving forward as to how EA could fall off. If those games continue to remain financially powerful, there's no reason that EA is going to fall off. So we could talk about all of the terrible, terrible games that they've made. If they keep making money, they'll still be around. And that's the harsh truth of it. It is what it is.
Not bad.
Perfectly timed. That's
not
a man.
Bad.
He also, though, gets to look at the screen and see how much time he has left.
That's a man who has played a lot of Sonic, though.
It is.
That's true.
Very true.
All right.
All right, Nate. It is over to you. Do you need it ready for you one more time?
No, I am ready.
All right, Norris, give us 45 seconds.
Hit that timer. All right. Is EA going to become financially unviable? Will it fold? No. This is a company who has been around for so long, probably within almost my entire life, definitely my entire conscious life as a gamer. And despite their mismanagement of various different IPs, I don't think that that's going to be enough to fold the company. You know, we've seen mismanagement of tons of different IPs, not just at the hands of EA. Square Enix is also notorious at this, and they don't seem to have had their bottom line that impacted either. So no, I don't think that we're going to see EA fold at all. Oh, I misjudged it.
See,
you started laying and you failed.
All right, back over to me then, I guess, for this.
All right. And
all right, so I actually do believe that this is going to be the beginning of the downturn for EA. It's never been quite this bad for them. Now you've got articles like coming out of Forbes talking about the gross mismanagement of the Star Wars IP. You're talking about an IP that is so powerful that it survived the three Lucas prequels and still managed to be like a multi-billion dollar property when it was sold to Disney. Disney being a great comparison, I feel like, to EA. They kind of own everything. And if they don't own it, they go out and buy it. So that's where you get people thinking EA is never going to fall. But where they do have a problem coming up is the government getting involved with the microtransaction system. That company makes money hand over fist on FIFA microtransactions, and when that falls out, it could be the beginning of the end.
Ah, very nice.
Very, very nice.
That's called hitting a post. You're listening to Checkpoint XP Esports and Gaming Radio. I want to thank everyone listening on Nashville Sports Radio, WNSR, 560 AM and 95.9 FM, as well as 103.9 in Lexington, Kentucky. We're currently playing a game called The Last Word, and now that all four of us have had a word, Sarah, who wins that round?
Well, it's kind of difficult because what I thought was interesting was how Norris and Joe basically said similar things, but came off with different opinions on it. But I actually have to go with Norris's event analysis of it, only because I unfortunately also agree that I don't think EA is quite ready to go down yet. And yes, it will be the microtransactions that may determine that, but I don't even think right now it's going to... I was convinced that's not going to be there yet unless something very big happens.
All right, if we're going to get one more round in, we got to start the next one. Joe, pick your favorite question.
All right, so within 5 years, the United States government will be a major factor in game ratings and profitability. All right, Nate, do you want to lead off this time?
Yep. Yeah, sure. Let's do that. So the United States, government, I hope will not be a major factor. My hope is that they're going to only limit the scope of their investigation to loot boxes, because if they start getting involved in the content moderation side of it, first of all, video games have never really had strict content moderation. They've only had rating systems placed on them by the ESRB. The government getting involved has the ability to regulate it. Just look at Australia if you need a model for how poorly that can go. There are games that have never come to the Australian market because the government has banned them on the basis of their content.
Nice!
Boom! Nailed
very,
that one.
Very good.
Nailed that one.
Very, very, very good.
All right, we got to keep it moving.
All right, Robbie, over to you.
All right. Do I think that the government is going to have a big say in the future of the profitability? I unfortunately say yes. It's recently came out that 2018 was a landmark year for video games. I think the number was like $43.6 billion for the year, up 13% from 2017. And the majority of that, we now know, about 80% of it, came from microtransactions of some sort. I think that whatever the government comes in and does, when they look at that type of profit margin, I think it's going to be very difficult for them to look at it, regulate it however they want, and then not walk away without taking some sort of cut. Will it affect content itself in video games? I don't think so. But when the government sees that type of money, they can't not put their hands into the pot there.
Ooh.
Very good.
Very good.
Much improved. All right, Norris, over to you.
All right. the thing about the government getting involved with video games is going to be very dependent on who is actually in government at the time. I think if the current, you know, sort of swing how the country is going right now continues and the left sort of takes over, then you will see the government more willing to get involved because, as Robbie illustrated, that's the point that they're going to take. There's so much money floating around and a lot of it is unaccounted for and really being earned in somewhat dubious practices, as some people would say. But I think if it's not and it's the right, then the market will be allowed to do what it does. And it's really sort of a lose-lose situation for consumers because do you want your content affected or do you continue to want to be preyed upon by these big game devs?
Damn. Hitting that post.
You guys are awesome at
hitting
this.
Hitting that post. All right. Got to quickly move it on over to Joe. Joe, what do you think?
All right. I think this is a really difficult question because, as Norris alluded to, it kind of depends on who's running the U.S. government in the next few years. There is so much money to be had that I don't think either way the government can really keep their hands out of it. I mean, you have a very liberal left government that is slowly transitioning in. I think they're going to look at it and say, you know what, we're getting younger. We now have the capability of understanding the space. But that's going to leave about a 5 to 10 year period where it's going to be really ugly. We're going to have 5 to 10 years where we're going to have an older demographic starting to phase out, the ones that don't understand how Facebook or Google searches work. And until those people get out, it's going to be rough. AOC 2028.
All right, Sarah, we don't have a whole lot of time, but who won that round?
I'm picking Robbie for sticking to the question and to the answer of it, even though no one talked about game ratings and was also convinced about the idea of with the statistics and, yes, profitability being a major concept.
All right, well, listen, we want to hear from you. Feel free to rebut any of our arguments. Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter and Checkpoint _ XP on Instagram. Still ahead on Checkpoint XP Daily, we asked our social media followers what game they've bought multiple times. We'll get their answers and share our own coming up in about 15 minutes here on Checkpoint XP Daily. But ahead next, with the government shutdown and Overwatch League Season 2 nearly upon us, could this be a problem? That discussion is ahead next on Checkpoint XP Daily from Beasley Esports XP.
This is Checkpoint XP, Esports and Gaming Radio. This is Checkpoint XP, Esports and Gaming Radio. CheckpointXP.com.
Hey, welcome back to Checkpoint XP Daily, your home for esports and gaming. Want to thank everyone listening on Fox Sports 1350 AM in Riverside, San Bernardino, as well as the Mighty 1090 in San Diego. Checkpoint XP Daily is now a part of the B-Pod Network at bpodstudios.com. For more great listening options, like If You Give a Rick a podcast for kids about the world of children's books, and Nerd Radio for everything from sci-fi to wrestling and all things nerdy in between, go to bpodstudios.com. The place to be for podcast discovery. We're all getting excited for Season 2 of the Overwatch League. With the holidays finally behind us, we can turn our attention back to esports. But with the U.S. government still shut down, it's beginning to raise some questions about how players will be getting here to compete.
Yeah, this is, I mean, at first you wouldn't really even think twice about it, especially because, you know, esports are kind of known for their visa problems.
Yeah.
But it happened to a Chengdu Hunters player, Yang Xiaolong. His visa was denied and he's not being allowed into the country, so he's not going to be here for the preseason. And there's beginning to be questions about whether or not he's going to be able to make it here for the regular season beginning February 14th. We started looking into it saying, wait a minute, if his visa is denied, can he actually do anything about that right now?
What does that look like for the appeals process? Because, you know, you got to think, like, with the government shutdown, it affects almost all areas of, you know, of government.
In some way, shape, or form.
They
keep saying only a third of the government is shut down, but I got to tell you, it certainly feels like a whole lot more than that.
Well, when you compare this to what happened last year, I mean, right off the top of my head, I remember there were at least three players from the Shanghai Dragons who were denied visas to begin with.
Didn't Kaguri get delayed for a couple weeks?
Yep, Kaguri was one of them, and there was no government shutdown then. This is the first time we've heard of it in Season 2, so I wouldn't think that whatever the reason was that it had anything to do with the shutdown.
Here's what we know about it. So visas for this sort of thing are handled by the USCIS, and what's important about them is they are completely run on the fees that they collect. And by the way, getting a green, or a, not a green card, but a visa to compete over here, that's like $1,800. Like, that's not cheap by any means.
No, it's not cheap. They make quite a bit of money, but here's where stuff gets really, really muddy, is that immigration courts are affected by the shutdown. So you're...
That's probably where they have to go to try and appeal the process.
Exactly. Mm.
So basically, the way it sounds like is if you are able to get your visa, no problem. If you go through the process, you get your visa, great, no issues.
If there's a hiccup...
If anything goes wrong, and you need to appeal...
Yeah, and not just a hiccup, appeal is very specific. If you have to appeal your visa denial, you will have to get an immigration lawyer and go through the courts, which currently are affected by
the shutdown.
By the shutdown.
Yes. Wow, that's actually pretty serious considering how much international talent comes in for something like the OWL. I mean, you know, esports all around, there's a lot of international talent, but specifically for the OWL, this seems really bad considering that all matches are played in Burbank.
Well, all of them are played in Burbank, and I think what really kind of stands out here is the expansion this year. When Overwatch League went from Season 1 to Season 2, they expanded teams, and almost all, not all of them, but nearly all of them are from outside the United States. We saw expansion heavy into Europe, heavy into, especially heavy into China, and into Canada. Those are all things that now people need to get visas to come here and compete. It's not like we have our home and away games yet. And even then, that would be a whole new level of complexity.
Yep.
I think Overwatch is one of the most affected esports by the government shutdown or by any kind of visa travel.
Well, yeah, especially for all the players who are here for NALCS. A lot of those players either already have visas or didn't have much of an issue getting them because that nobody's had visa issues for NALCS so far. And the thing is that when we're talking about, and Joe, I'm glad you really brought this up.
You're saying this year, no, this year. It's happened all the time in the past.
This, specifically this season. But, you know, you brought up a really great point in terms of when there's home and away games, that's multiple visas that you'll have to get. You'll have to go through multiple immigration processes.
You're going to have to get permission to go from the U.S. into China and then come back.
Yeah.
Right.
It's going to be extremely complicated.
And that's
got to
somehow be brokered by the league, because if it's not, I'm telling you not, that's going to be a real hard thing to do.
You're listening to Checkpoint XP Esports and Gaming Radio. I want to thank everyone listening on CBS Sports Radio 1300 in Baltimore, as well as The Ticket 1230 in Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina. We're currently talking about the U.S. government shutdown and how that could end up potentially impacting esports and whether or not players will be able to travel into and indeed out of and back into the country, and this does seem like something that is very complicated, and especially with a shutdown like this, it's going to mire the problem and extend it that much longer, and it doesn't seem like there's any end in sight. So I have to feel for some of these players, especially this Chengdu Hunters player that's caught up in the system now, and it remains very unclear whether he's going to be able to come in for the season.
And another thing that's really interesting is this reminds me of sort of what's going on with soccer and Brexit, because there's a lot of worry right now that if everything is completed and once the UK leaves the European Union, that getting those work visas to come and play in the English Premier League, which is a multi-million dollar, if not billion dollar league, that it's gonna have even more immigration issues. Well, it's absolutely absurd. It seems so counterproductive.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong too, but esports athletes technically have to get like work visas. They don't come in and out the same way.
You just can't get a tourist visa. No.
Yeah. Well, they don't come in and out the same way that traditional sports athletes do. Correct.
Yeah, they do. It's the same thing. It's the same visa process. It's a work visa. You're going over there specifically to get paid by an organization that resides in that country. You have to get a work visa.
But I'm glad you mentioned soccer and what they're going to be facing with this, because really there isn't a very good analog for traditional American sports to what esports are going to be facing. The closest thing you have is something like baseball
or hockey. Hockey, you have a little bit of international travel.
A little bit. But I mean, like with baseball, you have mostly, you know, Cuban players or Latin American players coming up who have to get a work visa to actually play here.
Yeah.
But you don't.
But that's all part of the recruitment process.
Right. And most of it is centered.
We're set to kick off OWL season 2 on February 14th. And I mean, like, there is no answer for this.
Right. That's the thing is the Chengdu Hunters do remain hopeful that they're going to be able to have this player
but
here when the season kicks off.
Completely out of their hands.
Exactly. So what I was trying to say there was, is if you look at something like the NFL, what's the biggest thing that they have to worry about in terms of international travel? What, they send a couple teams to London?
That's it.
So it's a play? So versus that with esports, is this going to be something that is sustainable not just now, but in the future when, you know, we've seen the international move over borders?
Well, I definitely think that that's a valid question. And I mean, imagine being in this kid's shoes, being drafted into the OWL.
Signed by your team.
Your dream has come true. You're going to be playing for your country, and you can't go to compete. How heartbreaking is that? I really got to feel for him. Listen, we want to hear from you. Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. Ahead next, we asked our social media followers what game they've bought multiple times. We'll get your answers and share our own coming up next on Checkpoint XP Daily.
Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
Hey, welcome back to Checkpoint XP Daily, your home for esports and gaming. My name's Nate Benson, at least according to Detroit Metro Times. Thanks for that. My name's actually Nate Bender. Glad to have you logged in with us. I want to thank everyone listening on WXSM Tri-Cities, Tennessee, as well as ESPN Phoenix 620. Make sure you visit our website over at CheckpointXP.com so you can subscribe to the Checkpoint XP podcast. Robbie, what's this week on the podcast?
Well, some games like League of Legends or Overwatch are born into esports. Some, like Dungeons & Dragons, make you ask why, but a new esports league actually has that last one looking like a fine idea in comparison.
Subscribe and download free on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and the Westwood One Podcast app from Westwood One Podcast Network. Everyone's listening. And by the way, this is a different podcast feed from the one that you're listening to right now. Make sure you go subscribe over at our website, CheckpointXP.com. You can also follow us on social media. That's CheckpointXP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram so that you can respond to our weekly social media question. This week, we ask which game you've bought multiple times. But before we get to your responses, I have to know from the room, which game have you bought over and over again?
Oh, man. You know what? Here's the thing. I have to have Symphony of the Night on every console possible.
Did you buy the PS2 re-release?
Yep.
Or that? I'm sorry, the PS4. PS3. The PS4 re-release. Because they put it out on PS4 as well.
What? They did?
Yeah, that's out. That's been out for a minute.
Well, now we know
that. I gotta go buy it tonight.
How did you not buy it?
Well, now we know what his next gaming purchase is.
I'm about to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
All right.
I'm going to go ahead and answer for all of us, say, all versions and forms of all the different Final Fantasies.
Oh, yeah.
So we can just get that out of the way.
Let's not do that.
But other than Final Fantasies, for me, it's, even though I've only technically bought the collections now twice because I went and did it on Origin, Mass Effect. But I tell you what, if they came out with it for the PS4, if they ever do a remastered collection for anything else, I'll pick it up there as well, because I would much rather play it somewhere that isn't Origin.
I have a really bad habit of buying games on another system that I've played before, I've finished. I have no real reason to actually ever go back and revisit them. But like, my entire collection of PlayStation 1 games, I basically rebought on the Vita. I don't know why. I just look at them. I just sit there and I look at them.
I
think about loading them up, and I'm like, one day I'll play you.
No, you're not going to play them.
I'm an idiot. And that's what Sony was counting on, and that's why that was so brilliant for them to do ports.
It still works.
It still works, and I think they should still keep putting out digital releases of PlayStation 1 games and PlayStation 2 games. I think that, you know, there is a lot of kitsch appeal and nostalgia appeal on, you know, games that you've already
Absolutely.
Played through once.
So.
But I've also bought multiple copies of physical games as well. Metal Gear Solid, I'm guilty of that on. Fallout 76, I think I've bought three times now.
Once as a gift,
for our cameraman, because I got...
You needed it, yeah.
Yeah, I actually got, like, I was like, oh, we should stop using Joe's account be our cameraman. And then my original account.
I bought Overwatch for twice.
Yeah, once for the PlayStation, and once for the PC. But I did that for Final Fantasy 14, once for the PlayStation 4, once for the PC as well. Did you?
So I own
jump in
Undertale.
Here
in before Undertale.
Undertale. I also have Shining Force for the Steam. I also have Shining Force just the cartridge, and I also have Shining Force cartridge case and manual. So I bought that a bunch of times. My documented history of Final Fantasy VIII purchasing is long and shameful. I also have Morrowind for Xbox, Morrowind Game of the Year for Xbox, Morrowind for PC, and I also have the Elder Scrolls collection, which, of course, has Morrowind in it. So, yeah, I'm guilty on all of those.
Wow, that's kind of a lot. You're listening to Checkpoint XP Esports and Gaming Radio. I want to thank everyone listening on Fox Sports, Shoals 97.9 FM and 1340 AM in Florence, Alabama. We're currently going through games that we've bought multiple times. We're going to be checking in with your social media responses here in just a second. Of course, Sarah is the voice of the people.
Sarah,
before we get to some of these social media responses, I gotta know, what game are you guilty of buying multiple times?
So I had to think long and hard about this because I actually usually don't. So unless it counts that I had to purchase Chrono Cross again for my brother because my ex lost it, I
don't think that counts.
No, I don't think so. Or having to rebuy Phoenix Wright because my friends lost those games
too.
Could
it be that we have a fiscally responsible member of the cast finally?
That very well may be. That's no fun for a question like this.
I'm this close though to buying the Zero Escape series for PS4 though, because they redid voice acting.
There you go. That's a logical reason to buy something. We're talking illogically buying something repetitively over and over and over again. Let's take it over to social media and get some of your responses in here.
Over on Facebook, William, like a lot of you, says every time they re-release Final Fantasy IV, I find myself wanting to play it, and unable to do so, I end up buying it again.
Here's the thing, is that once Square Enix did a legitimate re-release of Final Fantasy IV for the DS, and it was awesome. It had voice acting. It had great. I loved that version of Final Fantasy IV, and unfortunately, that's the pinnacle. That's the best. That's the best version that they'll ever re-release. And I don't know that it works on anything other than the DS.
Alex says that the only Mass Effect he hasn't bought three times is Andromeda, and that one was only twice.
I only bought Andromeda twice. Don't lie to me.
You didn't buy it.
Technically,
twice.
I did. The second time was only $4, though. So
oh, okay.
Norris, you might be interested in this. Taylor says that Castlevania Symphony of the Night own in just about every medium it comes in except for the Saturn version.
It's a classic. It satisfies every platformer itch any gamer would have.
That game was on Sega Saturn?
Sure was.
Was it really? Oh my gosh. I feel like it would be really weird to play, try to play on a keyboard though. I don't think it would translate very well. That's one you definitely need.
You need sticks.
Yeah.
You need sticks.
Have to.
Terry wants to know if Skyrim's out for flip phones yet.
How did none of us say Skyrim? The system that's on literally everything, Alexa included.
I've only bought it three times.
I've bought it twice. Nope.
The first time
I had my PS3 version, that was it.
The first time I played through was on Xbox 360. I'm not guilty of buying it. I think maybe Ryoku may have gifted it to me on PC.
You gotta gift it is
you.
On my wish list. I'm hoping somebody gifts it to
but
me.
But I definitely did buy it on the Switch when I bought my Switch. So yeah, that's at least twice.
Over on Twitter, Ravmal says Kingdom Hearts and its numerous sequels and forms.
Go away!
The original games on PS2, Game Boy Advance,
PSP.
You
knew it was coming.
Then he bought 1.5 and 2.5 for PlayStation 3.
The rest
and
is annoying garbage.
Distributed the games. He bought the PS4 combined sets.
Oh,
boom.
Man. I don't even want to say anything about that. Do the next one.
That's about $300 you'll never get back.
Over on Instagram, King Brahamit says he bought Persona 5 twice. Once upon release, but a few months later, I saw my local GameStop had the collector's edition, so I traded my regular copy and bought the collector's edition. I used the bag it came with as my gym bag.
You know what? That's not
buying twice.
No, that's upgrading. That's upgrading for sure. Although
I will buy Persona 5 twice when it comes out for the Switch.
Buying twice is when you get the Power Armor edition of Fallout 76 after already owning Fallout 76.
Now, to be fair,
that was an upgrade too.
To be fair, I had taken that copy of the game, and it's not like I loaded it on my PS4. I gave it to somebody as a Christmas gift.
Ah, yeah, that's so, being smart.
Yeah, but I am guilty. I did count that in my number of copies of Fallout 76 bought. So
back over on Twitter, Enyo says, Overwatch on PC and PS4, each Bioshock on release, and then the remaster PS4 bundle.
That's good. I would like to play Bioshock again, so that's, yeah, that's a good choice.
You know, I wouldn't mind if they, like, updated the textures on some of that.
They did. It's on Steam.
Oh, they did?
Bioshock HD is on Steam.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, and it's so good.
If you own the originals, you got them for free.
Yes. If you already have Bioshock on Steam, you got it for free.
I did not know this.
Yeah, you got to go check that out. It's awesome, dude. Oh,
man. I hadn't even heard of that. Wow.
Still back on Twitter, Terrell says, Final Fantasy IX, he's bought on every platform it gets released on, and he will be buying it on the Switch.
Well, yeah, Final Fantasies are definitely a popular response in here. That's going to do it for Checkpoint XP Daily, the first internationally syndicated show on esports and gaming for radio. Visit our website at checkpointxp.com for insight on esports and gaming, as well as our growing collection of podcasts and interviews. Join us Monday through Friday at 5 p.m. at twitch.tv/checkpointxp. Our theme is provided by the band Weird At Last. Find more at weirdatlast.com. Checkpoint XP Daily is a production of Beasley Esports XP. Thanks to our executive producing team of Buzz Knight, Mike Thomas, and Rick Scott. Lead segment producing by Joe Sloan. Producing and booking help from Christine Solis. Big thanks to Sarah Skopik over at the Checkpoint News Desk, and of course my co-hosts who pull double duties as producers for Checkpoint XP. Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan. My name's Nate Bender. Keep listening.
You've been listening to Checkpoint XP, a complete look at all things esports and gaming. Check out the latest esports and gaming news and opinions at checkpointxp.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.